Dr. Brassox. Yes, Attorney General.
Hi, David. Morning.
Yes, morning. You didn't hear exactly what was said this morning.
I regret that therefore, you know, I would have been at Parliament and still am at Parliament.
The matter that was raised this morning had to do with the Pledger Craft. And the directive said that Pledger Craft were not supposed to operate at any time. However, the complaint was that people who seem to be the people with money have been seen operating their Pledger Craft. As far as the call I heard on Wednesday was concerned, this was a Pledger Craft operator who said he felt disadvantaged and discriminated against because he couldn't take his boat out, but he saw Pledger Craft from among the rich and famous out on the water. And to that extent, I think you made some comment this morning in the news, but can you clarify exactly what you were saying?
Okay, well, you are right. I didn't hear the specific comment that was made, but I'm happy to weigh in on this matter. First of all, the directive says that with effect from 15th March, all businesses are allowed to open, but then it goes on to provide a few exceptions: bars, cinemas, gyms, yoga studios, and so on. And included in those businesses that are not allowed to operate at any time will be Pledger Craft and private boat charters. Now, this directive has been given to the Coast Guard, has been given to every single relevant authority. And if there is anybody who is operating or who has been operating a Pledger Craft or a boat charter, they are doing it completely contrary to law. So let me make it clear that at no time have I or any person in this administration given any exemption to anybody from the north to the south to conduct a charter or to conduct business in relation to their Pledger Craft. I've received requests for permission to maintain vessels. And from as early as 1st February, when we went into a more intensified lockdown, we've been allowing people who have fishing boats to go and maintain their vessels. We've been allowing people who have Pledger Craft to go and maintain their vessels. A vessel in the sea is at great peril. And we recognize the nature of the investment. So everybody, large or small, if you have a marine craft, whether it's a jet ski or a fishing boat or yacht, we have always allowed you to go and do maintenance. But we've never allowed anybody to go out to any charters or any Pledger Craft operations. So that person would not have been doing it under my permission, under my consent. It would have been doing it completely contrary to law.
You see, one of the issues seems to be surrounding this word operate. You say maintenance, but there's nothing in the directive that speaks to maintenance.
No, there isn't, David. There isn't anything in the directive that says, when we say that you're not allowed to operate, we're talking about operate in relation to your customer base. Okay?
You haven't defined operate in the directive.
David, there's so many words in the directive. We are talking about the ordinary meaning of the word, I'm afraid. We are talking about what that term means in the context of a business. A business that is allowed to operate is a business that is allowed to conduct its normal trade with its trading partners. Okay? So if we say that minibuses are not to operate, would it stand to reason that the minibus owner would not be able to service his engines? I don't think so. When we say to operate, if we say supermarkets can't operate, it doesn't mean that they can't go and check their freezers, but it means that you can't open to the public. So that is the normal meaning of the word operate, and I would respectfully suggest that it doesn't need any any particular definition. Businesses operating are operating with the public. They're engaging in interfacing on business with the public.
I suppose I will have to leave you all that to the lawyers and let them determine whether that is the fair and reasonable interpretation of the word operate.
I think it is. Look at the context.
But let's talk a little bit about the challenge of imposing these various directives and the degree to which people have been complaining about the fact that they feel it's discriminatory, that one person is allowed to do it, but another person, another business is not. How much of a challenge has that presented you with as Attorney General?
Well, it has been a challenge, but more in relation to perception. So it has always, since last year, it has always been recognized that both the Prime Minister and the Attorney General have the capacity to exempt a business from any particular requirement. The PM has of course, put that responsibility on me, and I'm happy for that. Now, businesses write and request exemptions for one reason or another. In every case, I have to consider what is the nature of the exemption being sought. Is it reasonable in the context, and does it contribute in any way to our COVID risk? So people asked, a company may say, well, I want a particular exemption to clear wine from the port. I would say no, and I have said no. On the other hand, I have allowed companies permission to clear heavy-duty equipment from the port that's required for Barbados Water Authority. So there's in every case, you weigh what is being asked, and in the context of what is being asked, is it reasonable? Is it something that we really need to do now, or can we defer it for a few weeks? So in the early stages, for example, we said that manufacturers for export could open. So those printeries that have overseas fulfillment orders were allowed to open and to service those contracts, because we didn't want to risk Barbados enterprises losing contracts. But then those companies, a printing company that only prints for local, they weren't allowed to open. So they will say, oh, it was discriminatory, or there was a prejudice, and so on. But no, because the directive always said manufacturers for export can open, while manufacturers for local consumption were limited. We've had instances too where people simply did not request an exemption, but say, well, I've been discriminated against, when the rules say clearly, if there's an issue, apply for an exemption and we'll consider it. So I understand the sentiment, but I don't think it's reasonable. And even in the context of the Pleasurecraft people who are saying they were discriminated against, they have a perception. I've seen a video of a boat in the ocean. I don't know what those circumstances are, but I can tell you, for example, that I gave permission for an individual to move his vessel from Port St. Charles to the shallow draft so that maintenance work can be done on it at the shallow draft. No, that's not operating. That's taking your boat to the shallow draft so it can be hauled out to have repair work done on it. So, I mean, it's difficult in these times, but at all times we try to be reasonable and to make sure that the rights of people are evenly balanced and that everybody has an equal opportunity.
Given the experience that you've had with this whole process, what would you identify as the significant lessons learned from it?
Well, it is clear to me as AG since last year that any time you implement large-scale restrictions on a society, it is almost repugnant to the way in which we normally live and work and breathe and so on. Part of our difficulty has been to get people to accept the legitimacy of the need for those restrictions. And I think we've tried to deal with that by way of communication. The other difficulty that we've had, the other challenge that we've had, is one that happens every day, but because it happens in relation to things that don't affect everybody, it doesn't generally make the calling programs. And what I mean by that, we may have a law that deals with agriculture, so it only affects the farmers, all right? We may have a law that deals with pharmacists, so it only affects the pharmacists. So that particular interest group will lobby and do whatever they do. These directives affect every single Barbadian. And you can be sure that every single Barbadian will read it differently. They will interpret it differently. They will say, this term needs to be defined. When another person may say, but why would you define that term? It's commonly used by all of us in this particular area. And then people are saying, well, why me? Why does my bar have to close, but you allow a ram shop to open? Why do you say that a cinema has to close, but you allow a church to open? Why can't we say that in the same way a church has a maximum of 75 people, why can't we say that a cinema has a maximum of 75 people?
And what do you tell them?
Well, you know, churches tend to have the lights on. If you think about it that way, it is, in a way, it is far easier to police what happens in a church in terms of people physically distancing and so on, as opposed to a darkened cinema when a movie is showing. So it presents a completely different risk profile. But the challenge is, how do we get people to appreciate that what they do, even though it might be people in an auditorium, just like a church, but because of the nature of it, it's a different kind of engagement.
AG, there are a number of people who asking some specific questions here. I want to take advantage of your presence here to clarify a couple of things.
Yes, please.
All right, so they want to find out, they want some clarity on rum shops. When are they supposed to close?
In our directive, we have provided that all businesses are permitted to open Monday to Saturday and close no later than 6 p.m. Okay? So whether it is a rum shop, a hardware store, whatever it is, Monday to Saturday, and they can close no later than 6 p.m.
This other question is, why is it that athletes have been unable to go back to training where you have Jamaica having track meets? This person says walking is allowed, but no track and field. Why?
But that's not correct. And, you know, again, it's a question of information. The Athletic Association and other sporting associations have written and said, can we get your permission? And this is not today. This is from weeks ago. Can we get your permission to allow our athletes to train? And we've said yes. So, I mean, they can tell you, the Amateur Athletic Association, the Carista organization, the cricketers, in every field of endeavor where Barbadians are engaged in competing, we have bent over backwards so long as they met certain COVID protocols, and in each case it would be different, but we've bent over backwards to allow them to train and so on. What we have not allowed are the meets. Now, Jamaica, every country makes its own decisions, and Jamaica will, if they decide to have meets, then that's fine. That's a Jamaican decision. In our jurisdiction, we said, no, we're not going to allow any competitive meets. But for them, someone to say that our athletes have not been allowed to train, that wouldn't be accurate.
On this pleasure craft issue, I think the AG got caught napping, says the writer. And the flimsy excuse he gave was the best he could have done. But here's another one for you. The head of the monitoring unit said yesterday on your evening newscast that restaurants can open up open up to 9 p.m. to accommodate patrons. I wonder, is the 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew discontinued? Does this mean that once you are dining out, you can break the curfew? Or are the restaurants serving fine dining guests exempt from the curfew? Can you get Mr. Chapman to come to the public and tell us how this can happen with a 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew still in place? Somebody else raised that as well.
Let me respond to that. And I hope that the writer doesn't mind if I answer. I don't think it needs Mr. Chapman at all. We took a conscious decision not to stipulate a closing time for restaurants. Took a conscious decision not to do that. The curfew time is 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, everybody must be off the street. But there are places in, and I can pick my constituency, for example, there are places in St. Joseph that serve food where the owner lives upstairs. The staff live around the corner. So they present a completely different situation. Restaurant and a cook shop, if you want to call it that, in the community. We know them, David. The owner lives in the same building. So what we said is follow the curfew requirements. You and your staff be off the road by 9. As the owner of the business, you will have to take responsibility and make a determination as to whether you close at 6, 7, 8, or 8:30. But we've had representations made to us where people have said, look, we want to be able to close at half an hour before because we have arranged for taxis to meet our people and get them all home. And we didn't think that that was an unreasonable request. So the curfew hour is 9 o'clock for a restaurant. There's no doubt about that. No doubt at all about that. But what we're saying is rather than say restaurants have to close at 6 or 7 or 8, we're leaving that flexibility to the individuals who are involved in it to set a time for themselves to close, mindful that the people must be off the road by 9. So this was not circumstance. This was a matter that we discussed extensively.
This person says, as a building contractor.
So the point is, when we say in our directive that you open between the hours of X and Y, we're not saying that you have to open at X and that you have to close at Y. So when we said that not all businesses can open from Monday to Saturday between the hours of 7 and 6, we're not telling you to close your hardware store at 6. You can close at 4 if you wish. We're saying don't go past 6.
Because you have to take into consideration that your staff have to get home and you don't want them to break curfew.
Absolutely. So the business that closes at 6 has less of an issue. But their rest, as I said, I used the example just now of a place in Bathsheba. The owner of that restaurant lives in the building. So there's no need to say make them close half an hour before so the staff can go home. The staff is home.
Okay. As a building contractor, I was happy to learn that construction was given the green light following the shutdown. However, when I emailed the drawings to be printed, I was told that they were not given permission to operate. As a result, my project was delayed.
Well, David, that is the problem there now is ignorance. The directive is published. The directive is circulated. We put it on social media. People just need to see what it says. When we permitted construction companies to open, we said construction companies can resume and together with all associated and allied businesses that make inputs into those construction companies. So obviously, for us, a construction company is going to go on, is going to work. The architect probably got to be there. The engineer may have to be on site. The land surveyor, the draftsman. And equally, that's why we said entities that make inputs into construction. Now, for us to go into every single list of businesses that make an input into construction, I mean, would be impractical. So what we said, and it was within the directive, as long as you made input into the construction business, you were allowed to operate. So the person who said, I can't print your documents, I can't print your drawings, first of all, that's not correct, because they would be providing an input in the construction. But secondly, that's the very reason why we put in the directives that if there's an issue, you can apply for an exemption. So we've given exemptions to people to go in to open their businesses to do one-off jobs, and that would have been one that could so easily have been fixed had they only read the directive.
This person likes the answer you give on the restaurants. He's saying, well, you don't necessarily have to close exactly at 9 o'clock. You have enough latitude. And you spoke earlier about the person who operates the restaurant and lives, the people who operate it live on the premises. They say, but rum shop owners don't often live at their shop. This writer says I'm a little confused.
We already
if rum shops have to close at 6, I can't follow the restaurant logic. In fact, the logic should extend to all businesses, says this writer.
And I understand that particular sentiment, but we still have as best we can to apply categories of people and categories of operations. We considered the situation of shops, supermarkets and all those kinds of retail operations, and we said, look, for retail, you're going to close at 6. And that was a decision to try to level the playing field. But in the case of a restaurant, I mean, there's one person who said to me that he operates this place in Eagle Hall, and all of his staff are from the Oberon. Nobody's more than 10 minutes away. So it benefits him to have the flexibility. We're not going to be able to get every single instance to fit the mold, but we try to capture as many as possible.
Explain this one. Why is it that vendors cannot sell on Sundays, but coconut vendors can?
It was a decision to grant them an exemption. Let me say this. You know, I think that people seem to think that the Attorney General sits down and creates these things out of the mist himself. We have a committee which is made up of health officials, cabinet officials, and so on. And before we settle the directives, we try to work through everyone. Now, we know that there's a significant amount of vending of coconuts on Sundays. That is our practical reality, okay? And we felt that they operated in, I mean, you know where they are. They operate in specific locations, and we felt that in the case of coconut lenders, we would give them the opportunity to play their trade, but we would not give the others. It was a decision that we made. We reasoned it through, and there will obviously be people who will not agree with a particular decision, but that is the output that we came up with.
Let me put one to you that I spoke about before. I couldn't understand why it is that people were not allowed to exercise from 5 o'clock in the morning and the curfew ends at 6 instead, because there are a lot of people who exercise before they went to work. But in these circumstances, they're not allowed to do that. What was the thinking behind having the curfew end at 6
sure.
rather than 5?
Let me interrupt you, because I'm not sure I understand clearly what you're saying. So,
the curfew runs from 9 until 6 in the morning. Uh-huh. Increasingly, there are people who are on the roads from around 5:30.
Oh, right.
To exercise, in a country that has been stressing.
So you're wondering why six.
Right. So why? So what? Yes. To give people more latitude there.
Well,
I'm fighting the comorbidities that you are always talking about.
And yeah, well, it's important that we do that. But still, you know, as I said, we try to work through. If we ended at 5, what's the movement pattern going to be like? Is it going to be just the people who are exercising, or is it going to be a whole set more people? So by choosing the hour of 6, we worked out. And David, look, there will always be inconvenient. If we set it at 5, there's going to be somebody who said, I start jogging at 4. Okay? If we, that's just how it is. People will always say, the rule that you have put in place excludes me. But does it capture most of the people? Are there opportunities during the day? And we felt that it was a reasonable balance. So if we set it at 5, what will the person who would have gone jogging at 4 o'clock say?
All right. There's one last question before you go, because thank you very much for taking these questions here. But I had a comment which was made by someone who wrote us, who suggested that they didn't like the tone that you come across with when you're answering questions from journalists. They think that you come across somewhat condescending. And I think having read it, the appropriate thing for me to do is to give you an opportunity to respond to any such criticism.
I'm happy to respond to criticism. To me, I suppose that particular listener or viewer has his view. Another listener or viewer would have another view. But as any human being who is fallible, if that is the perception that I convey, I will certainly try to modify it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Attorney General Dale Marshall, taking time out from Parliament to come and respond to a couple of questions which have been raised here. This, to my mind, also reinforces something that is very important. And I said it before, but not everything that the government has to say about COVID and the current situation can be said in the evening. And to have members of the administration sometimes come to clarify situations such as these could also be helpful to the administration, I suggest, because you can't cover all the bases in these evening news conferences that have been held. So I thank you very, very much for taking the time out and trying to address some of the concerns that have been raised here.
My pleasure. I mean, I have to say, I get sometimes in the course of a day, 100 emails, 200 emails, the people asking questions. The only challenge is they don't always have the opportunity to respond to each one in a timely way. But seeking clarification, especially in this context, is welcome. And it's important because this is not normal for us. This is not normal for anybody. And, what I will say to you about the directors, and if I hope you don't mind me rambling on this point. When we started to craft the directives, we had to make a decision. Are we going to drop this directive as if it were a statute, which you would appreciate, David, from all years in journalism, has a certain formality and language and unfriendliness about it, where you have to refer to the Interpretation Act to see what this term means and so on. We wanted our directives to be something that a person, it will still have to follow certain rules, but it had to be within the reach of the average person, because we always intended that these directives were going to be made available for every single man, woman, boy, and girl to clearly understand what it's about. So we're not trying to be awkward, and for those people who say, well, we haven't defined operations or we haven't defined this, we didn't want to begin with a document that had 4 pages of definitions because nobody will read it. And I want my mother, for example, to be able to pick it there and say, yes, this line relates to me. And so we've tried to put a document out there on every occasion that is reasonably user-friendly. And I think that we've been able to achieve that for the most part. But in every instance, we're always prepared to improve on it where we can. David, thank you very much for your time.
Can I just ask you one more question before you go?
Of course, yeah.
It's not specifically related to this, but